97.5 The Fanatic.
Oh my God. It just doesn't stop. It doesn't stop. This is every day, guys. It doesn't stop. The bad just keeps coming and coming. Actually, this is the wrong analogy. The bad just keeps getting piled on top. Like, it's a mountain of dew. Right? Like, we are an officially a dump. Not a dumpster fire. A dump. A landfill. That's what our landscape has become. The landscape is now a landfill. And more trash got piled onto the landfill yesterday. And I didn't think, well, I put it this way, I did not think it could get worse, but I remember sitting here going, wow, you know, of course they're going to make the playoffs. And we're talking Phillies now. Of course they're going to make the playoffs. It's impossible not to make the playoffs. It's impossible not to make the playoffs. Right? Right? Seriously, right? They have to make the playoffs. 8 teams make the playoffs. The top 2 in each division and 2 wild card teams. And the Dodgers and the Padres and the Braves just win all the time. So everybody else is mediocre to stank. So they got to be with that payroll, have to make the playoffs. And we wake up today and they're out of the playoffs. Not only that, they're a full game behind 2 teams tied for the 8th spot. It is almost impossible to try to do. I got to applaud Matt Klentak. I do. I can't believe he's assembled a pitching staff that doesn't make the playoffs with the 6th highest payroll in baseball. That is a feat with a PH, baby. PHEAT. Wow, Maddie. Think about yesterday. The ace. Come on, Nola. Oh, no. That's right. Against a dead national team. That team's dead. They're not making the playoffs. They're dead. So he's horrible. Now, contributing to the non-ace performance was the awful defense played behind him by the number 1 overall pick. Not Garrett Cole, not Bryce Harper, no. Mickey Moniak. Yeah. Mickey Moniak, who's got no business playing in Andrew's Sunday League, let alone Citizens Bank Park. But that's not the case. So then you got bullpen game, right? But so does the Nationals stink too. And you get out to another lead, right? And we've seen this again. We've seen this all too often. In fact, listen to this stat. 20 times this year. 20. Now, they only play 60 games, right? So, over a third right now. 20 times this season. The Phillies have allowed 4 or more runs in an inning. In a 60-game season that still has 4 games to go, 20 times they've allowed the opponent to score 4 or more runs in a single frame of baseball. That is impossible to do. And it was excruciating, right? Because, you know, I got to the lead, and of course, Nats, great. But they tie it. They actually tie the game. Then, and I'm a sucker. What a dope. Because I'm watching it. They take the lead 7-6. And they got a runner on third and less than one out. Up 7-6. And they load the bases. Right? They load the bases. And they don't score. All right. Well, whatever. Nats, bottom of the inning. Start with the runner on second. Get the runner on third. One out. And what happens? Oh, yeah. Walk off to a nobody. A walk off. And they lose two more. To a dead Nationals team. Nationals team that won the World Series. And then it's been a give up the whole pandemic season. And this collection of players, they can't get to the top eight in the National League. And that's after the 0-2 Eagles and after the Sixer debacle. And look, Flyers, thank God for them. But after that game seven, we have become a landfill. The flies, look, they're buzzing around. The dew is everywhere. Dew, by the way, everywhere. Just garbage, nasty trash. And I guess it's fitting for Klentak because he's at home as a dumpster diver in the trash to try to pick players. Because that's all he's done during his tenure as GM of the Phillies, who was supposed to be the next Theo Epstein. What a laughable joke that is. And let's go to a man who I know his soul is broken. The Tunis.
Hey.
So.
So yesterday, it was a nice day out yesterday. You know, I like the chillier weather. So I thought I'd go to a bar. I had some stuff to do. I stayed here till about 4 o'clock, then had a conference call yesterday, 5 o'clock. And I was like, you know what? I've been working hard today. I deserve to go to a bar and watch my Phillies and have a beer. I stayed for the remainder of game one, which I was disappointed by. And then I watched game two. The second I saw...
Well, who disappointed you the most? Was it Nola, because he's supposed to be an ace, and he didn't pitch ace-like? Or was it the fact that the number one overall pick, who, thanks to our friend Gabriel, mm-hmm. on the text board says Markel Moniak, stinks.
Yeah, he's pretty bad. You know how I feel about Nola. I think he's a above average number two starter. But yes. I will say this. It wasn't 100% on him yesterday. Moniak in the outfield.
It wasn't.
Jake Bruce has to make that play. Right. Bryce Harper can't bobble everything.
But here's the thing. He didn't have great stuff.
No.
He didn't have overpower. And he was facing a team that was dead.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, yesterday, Juan Soto hits his first home run in the month of September. Right? He's on a he's one of the best players in baseball.
Yes.
He's on a cold streak. This team's falling apart. They're not going to make the playoffs. And on September, 22nd, 23rd, whatever date yesterday was, he finally hits a home run, this one off of Jojo Romero. So who disappointed me the most? I don't know, man. I can't pick it at this point. I left the bar, the outdoor dining, there's a TV. I texted you this yesterday. When I saw Brandon Workman coming out of the bullpen, I said, all right, see you guys. I paid my tab and left. Before I got home, I got the text. Yeah, good thing you left. You missed it. I knew what was coming.
Well, I texted too.
Yeah, what? I knew they were going to lose. I knew Brandon Workman, whose ERA is over 5 this year, was going to blow another save. I knew that it was going to be the 13th blown save for the Phillies on the year. I knew that was coming, which is why I left. Because this team is just an absolute disaster. And I don't know, maybe you don't go to Brandon Workman, Joe. I'm kind of upset with Joe Girard. I get it. He has slim pickings coming out of the bullpen. It was a bullpen game yesterday. Maybe you don't go to Workman again. The dude sucks. He's my least favorite Phillies player of all time, officially.
Come on, better than sorry it wasn't good enough.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like him either.
I
yet,
mean, come on. They all
sorry
stink.
It wasn't good enough.
They're awful.
It's a pool of...
My man can't throw a curveball that doesn't finish above the letters or at the letters.
Yes, it's a pool of cess.
Yes. I
with the buzzing flies around it. I'm legitimately
heartbroken right now.
Yeah, I'm sickened by the landscape.
Yeah.
The Phillies, listen, I mean, just in full disclosure, you and I have spoke. We love, you know, I love them to death. Mm-hmm. I really do. But I've been on Klenchak for the whole time.
The guy here, yeah.
Well, I mean, I don't like his mentality. I don't like his philosophy. I don't like anything, and I had not liked anything he's done.
I don't like anything he says. The Real Muto thing the other day.
Well, we'll play that too, because that's another nail in the coffin.
He's a dope. Period.
But again, this is now it's Middleton's fault because he's the one who brought McPhail, that arrogant loser. And let's be right, you're a loser. Mm-hmm. You have lost since the Minnesota Twins of the 90s, early 90s, the days of the baggie, before Andrew was born. So you could take your born on third base ass and get the hell out of this town. But he also brought in Klenchak and has talked about Klenchak as though he is Theo Epstein.
Yep.
And that insults my intelligence. And the only thing close to the Phillies bullpen is, I don't know, the Eagles wide receivers. Like, it's just you go pick, go around. The Sixers can't shoot,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, just go around the whole horn. It's the same thing.
Took until 2 years ago for the Flyers to get a goaltender.
Yes. It's just rampant ineptitude.
It's like the Jason Kelce speech. Where he goes, it's the whole team. Well, you know what? It's the whole city.
It really is. I'm so sick to my stomach. I thought, and listen, I'm a fool, right? And I'll raise my hand to be at fault here because I'm the big mouth talking about the roaring 20s. And the only thing roaring are my bowels. That's the only thing roaring. And this is outrageous. It really is. I don't want to hear about pandemics. I don't want to hear about lack of this, lack of this, lack of that. I don't want to hear it. It's all just excuses and excuses. I don't want to hear about a freaking Super Bowl. I don't want to hear it. All right?
Klenchak had the audacity like 2 months ago to blame the pandemic for the lack of velocity coming out of the bullpen.
I know.
Tommy Hunter, 2 months later, is still throwing an 88-mile-per-hour cutter. I'm watching teams around the league with guys coming out throwing 96, 97 out of the bullpen on a given night.
Now, you want to talk about the height of just being weak? I mean, we're talking about the ultimate weak. Is that guy, because mm-hmm. that guy has trotted out every excuse known to man. In fact, I don't know if Dale Carnegie writes the how to influence people, he's got to write the book of excuses.
Yes.
How to win friends and influence people, right? Whatever it was. He's got to write the book of how to make ridiculous excuses. I mean, the stuff that I've heard is it really is unfathomable.
Don't forget, they weren't going to pay JT Realmuto because the landscape changed. Mookie Betts then gets like a $400 million contract.
No, what? I mean, there hasn't been a move that has worked out. Listen, I love Bryce Harper, and the only reason why they get Bryce Harper is because Middleton writes a check, right? That's really it. But he hasn't done anything that, when we talk about building a team, all his analytics and his Ivy League, Dartmouth, I'm going to reinvent the sport. He has not just failed miserably, he's been an embarrassment. An embarrassment. I mean, to have that, the resources of that payroll, and to put that out, that product. But again, it's the whole city. You know, we're sitting here, and the three biggest, you know, hopefuls. I'm not going to use the word stars, superstars, none of that. The three biggest hopefuls: Embiid, Wentz, Simmons. They're getting crushed by the people. And here's the thing. I don't know. Is it on them or is it on the people around them? I'm honestly asking the question. Is it what's around these guys? Is it how they've been coached? Is it what's next to them on the court or on the field? Or is it their own flaws that they'll never overcome? I don't know. Yeah, I know. Ben don't shoot. Well, I don't know. If he had a different coach, would he shoot? I don't know. If he had other guys around him, would he be better? I don't know.
He wasn't nurtured as much.
I don't know. All I know is this is where we're at. We're standing inside a 4-for-4 landfill. And I don't know what's real and what's not. I just know one thing, Andrew. It stinks. It stinks. It smells. As I sit and peer around the landscape in every direction except the Flyers, it smells. It's that bad. The only thing I hear are the buzzing of flies. And I'm sad. And I'm sick. And listen, you guys deserve better. This town deserves better. These fans who care and they love these teams. Love them. Unconditionally. They deserve better. And I'm sorry. I'm sorry for thinking that Wentz could play and that Simmons could play and that Embiid could play. I'm sorry. Because I don't know if it's those kids or it's the guys around them or if it's the coaching or the general managing or whatever it is. All I know is there's only one truism. Right now, there's only one fact as I sit here in the middle of this landfill. It stinks.
It stinks! It stinks!
Thank you, Rock. All right, 610-632-0975 is how you join us. I don't know where to go. I don't know where to go. I know one thing. I know you guys deserve better. We'll talk about it. We'll commiserate. Just make sure you bring your wear your mask. Not just because of the pandemic, but because, Andrew,
it stinks.
All right. Since the operative word stinks, right? Germs everywhere.
It stinks.
We got to go to Schaefer Supply. That's right. My man, Eric Schaefer, and his company, Schaefer Supply, is how we clean it up. Hey, Clintack, come here. I got an electrostatic sprayer right in the forehead. Look, classroom is back. The kids are back in school. I have a virtual back to school night tonight. School districts in Philadelphia and surrounding counties have been relying on ShaferSupply.com for their cleaning and janitorial needs since the 60s. All right, now as our attention turns back to school, Shapers is uniquely positioned to keep our students and teachers safe. Our cherished schools clean. A lot of schools right now are having their Wednesday break to clean. They call it like the disinfectant day. Well, this midweek cleaning can be made easier with the help of Shapers' wide-ranging supply of electrostatic sprayers and foggers. Listen, if you're a superintendent, director of janitorial, custodial purchasing, you got to do yourself a favor. Visit ShapersSupply.com. Find the sprayers right for your schools. That's ShapersSupply.com. S-C-H-A-P-E-R-S. Supply.com.
It's the Anthony Gargano Show on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5, The Fanatic.
We have the Pope of football on the line with us. And I'm dying to talk to him because he can really bring, I think, great perspective to this conversation on the Comcast Business Hotline, the great Ron Jaworski. Jaws, good morning.
Good morning, Anthony. Been a rough week, but we got to turn the page.
Yeah, let me ask you a question, because, you know, obviously, you know how we are. You live through it as a player. You live through it as a lifelong Philadelphia, you know, resident and Pope of Patterson Avenue, the whole thing. 0-2 is disaster, right? You know, that's always how we view things, because this stuff matters. But let's talk about Carson. Do you see talent in Carson Wentz?
Absolutely. You know, the guy has performed at a very high level throughout his career. And to me, you know, it's just a challenge right now that he has to work through. You know, I went through that tape three times already, Anthony. Monday and twice yesterday. You know, I'm just looking for something, you know. And you know, he certainly has regressed in a couple areas. I mean, his mechanics have gone south. Overstriding, understriding, throwing balls in the dirt, overthrowing. There's not one specific thing that I can really point to. I watched his mechanics of his arm slot, his passing slot. I've watched his feet, and he's very inconsistent right now. And to me, and I've been in those situations. Every quarterback that has played in this game, you go through patches in your career where you're just not in sync. And there's only one thing you can do: work your tail off. And this has got to be a really big week for Carson and the coaching staff and Press Taylor, if he's the one that is working on his mechanics day in and day out and drill in and drill out. Because you got to become repetitive in your mechanics. And that leads to consistent accuracy and repetitive accuracy. And right now, Carson is not there.
Well, all right, let's figure out why, right? So the first half, or the first, you know, quarter and a half against Washington, I don't know, he came out, he looked fantastic, right? He was very accurate in the whole thing.
Yep.
What happened from then on?
Well, you know, he made a terrible throw with a minute and 44 seconds to go in the first half with a 17-0 lead. You know, as a quarterback, you've got to be totally aware of every situation. You know, you're cruising at 17-0. You want to give Washington zero at halftime and zero to go in that locker room and say, okay, we got it going. He made a huge mistake in throwing the interception on the old cut. Should have been low and outside. It was high and inside, picked off. All of a sudden, you gave Washington energy. And, you know, then he came out in the second half, and it was just holding on to the football. And it was, you know, it was surprising to me, because Carson normally gets through his progressions pretty good. He's strong in the pre-snap phase, and, you know, there's been a good chemistry with him and Doug and calling the plays. And, you know, although it was a horrible throw at the end of the first half, I did not think it would impact him in the second half as a guy now in his fifth year. You know, you got to just move on. You're going to make mistakes. This is the NFL. You're going to be embarrassed and humiliated at times by NFL defenses. But, you know, one of the great attributes you must have as a quarterback is amnesia. You got to forget. You got to move on. Play the next play. That's all you control. And it seemed to impact him. It really did. He was, you know, the mechanics began to break down that second half against Washington, and he held on to the football. And almost the same thing happened against the Rams. You know, I mean, the Rams are a good team, a better football team than Washington, but he never found his rhythm in that game.
Yeah, and can you figure out why? Now, I'll ask, does he have sufficient protection? I mean, I don't want to make it an alibi or any of the alibi, because it's his mechanics is the fact that you have, it appears, one receiver that you can really trust, right? And Deshaun. Forget the tight ends. We'll talk about the outside receivers.
Right. Well, first of all, you start out with this. The offensive line, I thought, had a terrific game.
Right.
They were terrific. You know, unfortunately, when we lose, we overlook the guys that played well. You know,
and
the offensive line, you know, had a terrific game. I can't say the same about the Washington game, but they did in this game. And Aaron Donald, one of the premier pass rushers in this league, was non-existent. I think he had a tackle in the game if he had that. So the O-line did a great job. So I can't say it was pass rush pressure. I can't say it was anything that the Rams did defensively. Hey, they're a good team. The Rams are a good team. They're gonna make a run this year. Barring any unforeseen injuries, but they're a good team. They got a good secondary. But that still is inexcusable that the Eagles could not move the ball better than they did. You know, there was a better running game. There were receivers open. He missed some receivers. You know, you got to get more out of Arcega White. You've got to. There's no burst to his game, or you got to put him on the bench. He's just been unproductive. Deshaun was invisible the first half. If I'm calling plays, I'm getting Deshaun in this game.
I didn't understand. I didn't get, because Doug said, well, we made a conscious effort at halftime to get him the ball, and that was the only connection that worked. Like, he makes the thing that I scratch my head at is that he makes that one of the toughest throws for any quarterback from the opposite hash, that out to Deshaun. He made three times on Sunday.
Yeah, it was a beautiful play call off play action. You get the linebacker sucked up, the safety's in the middle of the field. You got one and one with half field to work with, you know. That's pitch and catch, man. That's practice. And, of course, they executed it perfectly. They had the running game going. You know, Doug did not have a good play calling game. You didn't get the ball to Sean. You know, the deep ball was non-existent. I mean, what do we hear this whole offseason? That's all we want is speed. Everything we do is speed, speed, speed. Well, they didn't throw one ball deep down the field. I'm coming out and I'm saying, okay, I'm going to test these guys. You got all these burners, you know, you got Rager, and you got all these guys in Hightower, these fast guys, Deshaun, and you're throwing dink and dunk passes and bubble screens. Well, you know, it's kind of the opposite of what you said you're going to be, why you drafted all these guys. And then, hey, by the way, if you want to see some speed this weekend, you're going to see some. They're on the Bengals.
That's right.
You know, you're looking at a John Ross. The guy runs a 4.22 40, you know, coming out. And you're going to see some go routes from Joe Burrow. So this secondary better have their cover shoes on deep down the field, because, you know, the Bengals are not going to come in here and lay down. But I don't want to get off on a tangent. But they do have speed. The Eagles have speed. But you got to use it. You know, these Hank routes and these stop routes at 5 yards and these bubble screens. You know, hey, I could find a bunch of guys on the street to run those plays. But now you drafted guys for speed, and you're not even using them.
Yeah, and that's the thing that, I don't know. I mean, are those kids ready yet? I mean, what do you see from the routes that are being run?
No, they're not ready. I mean, they played two games in the NFL in the 2020 pandemic era.
Right.
With no offseason,
right.
No training camp, no preseason games. I mean, okay, week one, you go to Washington, it's your first NFL experience. Hell no, they're not ready. You know, the timing is off. That's why I'm stressing to you, as I did a moment ago, Anthony. Who's the guy Carson has a good feel with? Deshaun. We'll target him. Who the guy is that, you know, he has Zach Ertz. Zach has disappeared. You know, of course, he overthrew Goddard a few times as well, and Goddard wide open on a little corner route up the field. He didn't see him. And he started to get a little bit of a tunnel vision. So you got to be really careful. But, you know, to me, you go to practice and you just work your butt off. You work your butt off. You better turn the noise out, because this is Philadelphia. You're going to hear the noise. Go to practice every day and bust your butt and get that confidence level back between you and your wide receiving core. If you have to stay after practice for an hour and throw balls to get timing down, you stay for an hour. I'm not saying he's not doing that, because I'm not there.
Right.
But this is what you have to do. When, you know, when you're in a slump, and he's in a slump right now, you know, he's like the Phillies. You know, they're in a slump, you know.
Okay.
And, you know, you got to work through these things. Just, you know, this will define Carson Wentz. Because it's the first time in where I can actually say he's had two down back-to-back games. Bad games by the quarterback. Winnable games. They should be 2-0 right now. They're 0-2. And it lies at Carson's feet, because he made mistakes that hurt his football team. He's thrown four interceptions. The Eagles have zero interceptions, only one turnover, -5 in the takeaway category through two games. The Eagles will have an awful season unless they improve upon that. So clearly, you know, we're going to find out what's in Carson's belly this week. We're actually going to find out what's in his team's belly this week, because obviously Jim Schwartz took a bullet for the team yesterday. Took a bullet. Went up there and was a real man and said, I'll take it. But you know what that means?
He was fantastic.
He took a bullet. So you know what he's saying right now, guys? I took a bullet for you. Let's see what you do against Cincinnati. I took it for you this week. I'm not doing it anymore. You better play up to your ability. By the way, the defense is not playing good, but so I'll make that clear as well.
Yeah, I guess, and we're talking to Jaws on the Comcast Business Hotline. I guess I wonder, how do you gain confidence back when you got you by your own admission and my own admission, and we look at this thing and then. That all but one of your receivers, wide receivers, not the tight ends, but all one of your are green and not ready to play in the league yet.
Well, we're going to find out. We're going to find out if these guys can grow up, you know. But I will say this as well. When you get in these situations, this is when you count on your defense. You know, and they got back to the running game. The Eagles offense did, which I was happy to see because the equilibrium wasn't there in Washington. You need to get back to it. And they ran the ball well. I thought, you know, for the most part, it was fine in that regard. But, you know, when you got the offense struggling, there's always a sense that the defense feels it. And the defense has to make plays. Zero turnovers from the defense through two games. Zero. And guys are running wide open, mistakes, mistake after mistake in coverage, losing your coverage, looking in the backfield, falling behind. I mean, it was a bad performance by this defense. Like I said, Schwartz, he took the bullet, but it's up to these guys to come back Sunday against Cincinnati and show who they really are. Hey, maybe this is who they are. We're going to find out. Maybe this is who they are. That means we're looking at a long season.
I mean, that's what I think scares everybody. I
agree with you, Anthony. I'm not sitting here and saying, hey, they're going to blow out Cincinnati. It's
right.
The Bengals. It's, you know, the team. They always stink, you know? No, this is a talented Bengals team that has enough weapons to move the ball. I mean, they can really move this. When you look at guys like Joe Mixon out of the backfield and Bernard Giovanni, these guys are excellent receivers. And, you know, and we all watched the Eagles linebackers on Sunday. They weren't covering many people, you know? So they got these two really good backs on the backfield that are great in-space receivers and runners. You know, I'm putting big stars by those guys. I better worry about them.
Yeah.
All of a sudden you start worrying about those guys, and you got, you know, guys that fly, like I already mentioned, John Ross, or also T. Higgins, a kid from Clemson who's a very solid receiver, young but good solid receiver, and Tyler Boyd can run. A.J. Green is a little banged up. He's not the same guy, but, you know, he's a world-class receiver. So, you know, you can't take this Bengal team lightly, and the Eagles better not, or we should roll 3 on Sunday night.
Yeah. I'm with you. I got two things for you. One, do you think he's pressing and that adds to the mechanical issues with his mechanics? That it appears that the one thing you know about him is that it's like he can't turn it off, like trying too hard. And, you know, he held on to the ball and cost him a field goal. He makes that throw that gets picked in the end zone on first down. Is that all a product of pressing, and the pressure to try to do something?
Yeah, I believe that has something to do with it, you know, but Carson's, you know, in his fifth year, he's got to work through it. I mean, he really does. And you know, I've been in those situations. I can speak from my heart. You know, you know it in your belly when you're struggling, when the ball's not going where it's going to go. And I've always said this, and Ant, I've said this to you many times, you know. You know, if you're playing 16 games a year, and this is just my personal feeling, there are going to be a couple games where I just didn't have it. You know, I didn't have the fastball. I didn't have the pinpoint accuracy. And sometimes you got to play through that. You got to say, hey, coach, man, you know, and even in pregame warm-up, you kind of sense the ball is not going where you want it to go for whatever reason. And it's kind of the game where you got to say, all right, give me the high percentage passes. You know, get the running game going because I don't have the A game today. Now, sometimes you start out that way and you work into it, but there are definitely a couple days where you depend on your defense to win it for you, or you depend on your running game to carry the offense. So those, I think that's where the Eagles are right now. They need, number one, the defense, and particularly the defensive line, to step up and play like they're being paid the number one defensive line in football. And number two, the quarterback has got to work through the challenges that he's going to face.
The other thing I'd ask you about is, where do you think Peterson and Wentz are when it comes to the same page? Like, Doug was asked in the news conference whether or not his quarterback was, quote, regressing. And he entertained the question. That's a good question, he said. And I'll be honest with you, I've been around the game a long time. I never saw a head coach who would ever even entertain that question.
You know I love Carson. You know I love Doug. You know, I mean, this is
yes.
Personal. This is, you're asking me football questions. I'm going to be honest with you.
Yeah.
He's regressing. he's regressing. That's simple. I mean, I'm not going to be an idiot and say he's playing great. He's regressing. He's missing guys open. He's holding on to the ball. The mechanics aren't sharp. He needs an epiphany, man. He better find it quick.
Is Doug the guy? Does he need someone else
to help out? I don't know the structure, again, if I'm there, I could give you a more definitive answer.
Yeah, I know, I hear you.
We know the meeting room, we heard it so many times, and obviously everything's in harmony when you're winning and winning Super Bowls in the meeting room with Frank Reich, and, everything was great. But again, I'm not there with Press Taylor and Marty Morningwig and all these other coaches they have right now. And by the way, sometimes, you get too many guys around a quarterback. Who has Carson's ear? Who's with him? Is it Doug with him on the practice field? Is it Press? Is it Deuce? I don't know because I'm not there. I can only give you a hypothetical. But clearly, there's some disconnect right now.
Yeah. Hey, tell me about tonight because you're going to be talking about it. I love the Ron Jaworski show. Tonight it's 6:00.
I got Barrett Brooks tonight, and it's the perfect time to talk offensive line.
Yes.
with a transition of the Eagles' offensive line. I always love having Barrett because he works his butt off. He studies the tape. He's kind of a wonk like I am for the tape. And with Barrett, you get down in the trenches. I focus on the glamour boys, the quarterbacks, the running backs, and every once in a while you got to.
You're a glamour man.
Down and dirty.
You're glad.
You got to get down and Barrett's just awesome. So hey, I get fired up when we get Barrett on the show, just like Baldy. Baldy's the tape wonk, and he gets everybody going, tape study. So tonight's going to be a little X's and O's show, but I love Barrett because he is straightforward, honest.
That sounds great. Where are you going to be at?
Yeah, we're actually going to be at the Burns Honda studio, in their showroom tonight. So it's going to be great.
Very cool.
Yeah,
man.
So we'll have some fun. Maybe I'll have to sell some cars, too.
Hey, you do it all, Jaws.
I'm the jack of all trades.
That's it, brother. Listen, have a great show, man. We love you, buddy.
You got it. Thank you, Anthony. Always a pleasure being with you.
There he is, the great Ron Jaworski on the Comcast Business Hotline.
It's the Anthony Gargano Show on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Jeff McClain does a great job. Inquirer.com. You got to read him. You got to follow him on Twitter. Jeff, good afternoon.
Hey, Anthony.
What the hell is going on down there?
I don't know. We're not allowed down.
Right, that's true. I mean, that's ridiculous. First of all, that answer, by the way, if Jimmy Kemsky wasn't a gentleman, he could easily say, well, I don't know, Doug, did you play?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, give me a break. Why are we now in the namby-pamby, all defensive when on Monday you thought, hey, regression's a good question?
Yeah. I mean, Doug has kind of pulled that before, that card. I think one time he said, I'd love to have you guys, bring you guys down from the press box and place you on the sidelines and put on the headphones and make the decisions I have to make. And, he said that last year. It was last year, 2 years ago. And, obviously I never played in the NFL. In fact, I didn't play much of football. But what I always say to people who go in that direction is, I don't have to be president to cover the White House either. I mean, when you're a journalist, certainly you want to be informed. And I feel like I've gone about informing myself on the game of football as much as I possibly can, but a lot of it's just asking questions, getting information, and asking the right questions. And I think that was a fair question that Jimmy asked. I mean, this goes back really honestly to the mechanics of Carson's throwing, and I think that Doug is sensitive to that question, and Carson certainly is sensitive to that question because it's something that is an issue and has been an issue since he's been a rookie, and it's something he's worked on diligently. I give him a lot of credit. He's always kind of doing stuff to try and improve his mechanics, but when you can't complete a 5-year pass to Ertz on a flat route, and it sails over his head by 5 yards, I mean, that's mostly probably a mechanical issue.
So what is it, in your best guess, as to the mechanical issue? Because, you know, there are times when it really works. There's times when, you know, he looks fantastic. The first quarter and a half against Washington, he was accurate, throwing dimes. Even during a couple of the drives, he looked really good on Sunday. What is the come, how it comes and goes?
I think for Carson, and I've heard this and talked to a lot of people. I wrote a story about this 2 weeks ago. One of the problems is Carson's, would you say, his best throws are often when he's off balance. When he's out of the pocket, he's moving. And I feel like he relies on that too much from the pocket. So he's not setting his base and throwing from that, you know, repeated motion. I mean, a lot of what quarterbacks do in the NFL is what pitchers do in Major League Baseball. I mean, it's a repetitive motion, and it's getting it right so that each time you do it, it's the same type of throw. Now, look, obviously every throw is going to be different to some degree, but you have to have kind of the same template, the same base when you are throwing from the pocket, and you have to throw from the pocket in the NFL. I mean, that's just a part of playing the game at that level. And I think, from what I understand, Carson sometimes doesn't do that even when he'll make the harder throw than he really needs to do. And I think that was kind of evident on the interception, the pass that he threw to JJ in this pass game. If you look at it, he's overstriding. He's trying to put a little extra on the ball. And what happens when your base is, when you're overstriding, mm-hmm. you can't get the necessary torque mm-hmm. for the velocity. And that's why that pass. And now I'm going to ask Carson this question in a little bit. If he had to do it all over again, would he not make that throw based upon the decision, or would you actually want that throw back?
Right.
And just throw it the right way? Because I feel like if Carson does zip it in there with the right mechanics, he probably completes it.
So,
the decision probably wasn't great, but my point is, there's plenty of times where Pat Mahomes and Aaron Rodgers, and you're like, what are they doing? And
right.
they make just an unbelievably great throw.
Go back to the one he makes in the back of the end zone against Washington last year during the 4-game run.
Right, to Miles Sanders. Remember the pass, the Seattle falling, this is 3 years ago, falling to the ground, the pass he threw to Corey Clement against the Redskins when he just threw it almost sideways. It was just right on a rope to Corey Clement. And he's made those passes before, and you like that aggression. But you have to know when to pick your spots. But I also wonder, if the aggression is not being supplemented by proper throwing mechanics.
So go back to the relationship between Doug and Carson. You know, there's all kinds of speculation. Which you're close. You've been down there before the pandemic. I mean, you kind of see it. I mean, what are those two? You know, close to being on the same page? Or are they close, period, as worker? I mean, coaching quarterback. I don't know. I mean, you would know better than we would.
Yeah, they get along, from what I understand. I don't think there's any issues. I mean, again, Doug kind of gets along with everybody. Doug certainly has his moments, but I think for the most part, because he is an amiable fella, withstanding the media at times, I think even with Jimmy, he's kind of joking a little bit there. And I think with Carson, I think they do have a good relationship because Doug is easy to get along. But I wonder, because if Doug's so easy to get along with, does he bend too much to Carson's will? And that was certainly the case with Mike Groh. They butted heads. He butted heads with Flip and Reich. That's part of it. You know, that happens all the time. I mean, I almost feel like you need that.
He butted heads with those guys, Flip and Frank, but he also respected those guys.
He was younger. He was more the pupil. He was still learning the game. Those guys had a certain gravitas you know, that maybe Mike Rowe didn't have, because Rowe had never been OC in the NFL. You know, Press is a guy that he kind of grew up with in the NFL. He was just quite a control coach when Carson was drafted, and, you know, moved up to quarterback coach and is now pass game coordinator. I do hear that, you know, Press will point out stuff to him. I don't know if it's strenuous, you know, is he really kind of getting his point across in a certain way that maybe sometimes Carson needs to hear it. But, you know, Carson is strong-headed. He knows this, a type A guy. I've written about this plenty of times. You know, I don't think it's as bad as maybe the rumor mill is making it seem. But it's something certainly that has to be taken into account when you assess Carson Wentz's current play.
All right, so is the whole thing on Wentz?
No. No. I mean, you know, Sean McVay did a pretty good job of scripting a game plan to get what I think is a inferior quarterback, at least inferior to Wentz in terms of talent, and made him look like Joe Montana. I mean, so there are things that Doug can do to help Carson out. And, you know, I look at this past Sunday, and again, I don't know, you know, Carson's influence on this or not, but they had 12 personnel, like, was it like 90% of the time?
Yeah, yeah.
And this is going to be a problem moving forward for them, because the off season was spent adding speed, and, you know, add speed certainly at the wide receiver spot. And if you go on 12 personnel 90% of the time, you're not getting that speed out there as much as you want to. And, you know, I can understand where they're coming from. Two of their best offensive skill guys are their tight ends, Zach Ertz and Dallas Goedert. But, and certainly you get a matchup, favorable matchups here and there. You get, you know, a linebacker on a tight end there often when you have both those guys out there. But we're not talking down the field throws in a lot of cases. And that's what this offense, you know, they came out and did it in week one, hit on some, didn't hit on others, but you didn't see it at all. And I know that the Rams were playing back, but you can complete downfield throws against the cover two. I mean, it's not like it's not.
Deshaun had a living running by a cover two.
Right. So I wonder, it's just, you know, Doug's got a difficult balance to strike here. It was interesting in the first week they did have 0-2 personnel, which on several plays, and I think I wonder if we'll be seeing more of that. Now, that takes Miles Sanders off the field. But, you know, two tight ends and three wide receivers, that's maybe one way to get around it. But you're not going to do that very often.
No.
It's just going to be a couple plays every week.
So all right, so is this thing fixable?
Yes.
Are you, for as far as being a playoff team?
I was just going through the numbers. So, you know, the one thing they have going for them is there's 7 playoff spots this year. There's an additional one. And the other thing they had going for them is the NFC East is not strong. So since 2008, 117 started 0-2, and only 11% have made the playoffs. Since 1990, only 30 that have started 0-2. But again, that extra playoff spot could help them. Look, I mean, I know playoffs, we shouldn't. Playoffs, you know, Jim right. Morris shouldn't even talk about playoffs at this point. But, look, this Sunday, to borrow a phrase, is not a layup. But if they win this Sunday, and depending upon how they win, you know, certainly that ends a little bit of, you know, the downside that we've seen, obviously, at the beginning of the season. But, you know, you look at the next three games, San Francisco, which is they're really beat
up. Banged up, yeah.
Really banged up. And then you get the Ravens and the Steelers. Steelers first, and then Ravens. I mean, realistically, 2-4 at best, maybe.
Yeah.
I think 3-3 is unlikely. 2-4, you still got hope because you get the Giants the following week, and then you have a bye. The Cowboys. You have Giants and Cowboys. Two games you can win. You got to win those two games, and if you get the 4-4 at the bye, certainly you have a chance. But you know, they obviously got fundamental problems. They got to figure a bunch of stuff out, but you know, they have been able to move the ball on offense. Defensively, I felt like this past Sunday is an anomaly a little bit in terms of Jim. I mean, he took it on the chin yesterday, and rightfully so. But it's not all him. There are personal issues that just aren't going away.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. I appreciated Schwartz yesterday. I thought he was really good in front of you guys. What we don't know about this defense. Like, what are they? And the linebacker thing is scary.
Yeah. Look, I understand you pick a position on defense in this scheme that you're going to undervalue, and it should be linebacker. But to this degree is kind of alarming.
Yeah.
Everybody on the squad is on the roster is like on a rookie contract, or, you know, there's no guaranteed money there. So, okay, you could say, oh, these guys are all playing for something, but you need some proven talent there.
Yeah.
And I mean, when Nate Gary's your number one guy, I just don't understand how you can go into the season thinking that he's going to be the guy to kind of hold that position down. So linebacker is certainly an issue. And safety's an issue too. And I like Rodney. But Rodney's a number two. He's not a number one. And Jalen Mills, to his defense, I mean, he's been tossed into a tough spot. This is a position he's never played before in the NFL. And you know, we wrote about it, and we asked him about it, and we all, you know, total confidence, et cetera. I'll be able to make this move. I played a little bit of it at LSU. I know the defense, et cetera. But, yeah, that's a little different than going out there and playing the game at this level. And it showed up. It showed on Sunday, I thought. So, you know, the middle of the field is a problem, and that's the Rams saw that, and they went after them.
Yeah,
they went after them. Yeah, because, again, like, Darius Slay is a good cornerback. You know, I think he's come out and played really well these first 2 weeks.
Yeah.
To see what he can bring to the
shadow
table.
Corner. Yeah,
and you need one of those guys. That's great and all, but I think they focus too much on that, and then again, not on the other areas. And then in games, you can just say, okay, I just won't throw to that guy. I just won't throw to that one player that's being covering him. You know, right?
That's true. Hey, listen, I know you got Carson coming up, so we appreciate it, brother. They're always interesting. Whatever it is, they're always interesting, you know?
Well, you know, Sunday will be interesting. We'll see.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I know.
I mean, you know.
I feel the same way. That's not a layup.
No, I mean, you know, when you're 0-2, there are no layups. So, you know, again, like I'm doing a story on like 10 reasons to feel optimistic that Eagles can turn this around. And I feel like there are some.
10?
There are glimmers. I found 10. I found 10.
Wow.
Can you believe that?
No.
Me, Mr. Positive right here, found 10 reasons why
I like it. I like it, brother. I do. I don't know if I believe it, but I like it. Jeff, you're the best, man. We love you, buddy. Thanks a lot, man. Jeff McClain on the Comcast Business Hotline.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.